before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst.
And welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. Hope you like our new opening song, Beers of Alaska by Recess Duty. We will be interviewing them later in the show, and they'll be telling us how they came up with a winning jingle. We'll also be interviewing Brian Olson of Alaska Berries. But first, let's move into the beer news of the month. As I mentioned in last month's show, Sacktown Liquors opened on the 14th of April. More good news from Sacktown. The Growler Bar is now open with 14 taps. So if you're heading in or out of Seward, be sure to stop in at Sacktown Liquor and check it out. The Matanuska Brewing Company has started a GoFundMe page to preserve the iconic silo and grain elevator that it purchased as part of the acquisition of the former Matanuska May Dairy. These buildings have been part of the Palmer skyline since 1956 and 1957 when they were constructed. The brewery hopes to maintain them and restore them. So if you're interested, check out the GoFundMe page. The Soldotna Rotary has announced that the 7th annual Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival will take place on Saturday, August 12th. There'll be some changes in this year's festival. Specifically, it will run from 5 to 9 p.m. rather than going until 10 p.m. The first hour will be a VIP session, which will be limited to 200 tickets, and each brewery is being asked to bring a 5-gallon keg of special beer to be served only during this session. There will also be music and food vendors again this year. So mark your calendars, August 12th, the 7th annual Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival. Gold Rush Brewing of Skagway has changed its name and moved to a new location. Gold Rush Brewing has now become Klondike Brewing Company and has moved into downtown Skagway from its former location on the Access Highway some miles out of town. Now, national beer news, Heineken, which in September of 2015 bought a 50% share of Lagunitas Brewing, has now purchased the other 50%. So Lagunitas Brewing is now 100% owned by Heineken. At the Leavenworth Ale Festival in Washington last month, Baranoff Island Brewing of Sitka won both Best Dark Ale and Best in Show with its Medjvedi Stout. Congratulations to Baranoff Island on winning this award. Kenai River Brewing celebrated its 11th anniversary and one-year anniversary in its new location on Thursday, May 18th, with a performance by Denali Cooks. The brewery has expanded its hours to be open 7 days a week and will continue with those expanded hours throughout the summer. Cassox Brewery in Nikiski is looking to hire experienced sale professional. If you're interested in taking a job with Cassox, check out their website for more details. A new ale house with about 75 beers on tap will be opening in Midtown Anchorage. Anchorage Ale House is set to open in June at 2830 C Street, according to owner Matt Tomter, in the building where previously Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar and then Crossbar Sports Restaurant once were. Mr. Tomter owns Palmer City Ale House and Eagle River Ale House and has long been looking to expand into Anchorage. The new restaurant and its menu will be similar to that of the Palmer and Eagle locations. Tomter is also one of the owners of the new Matanuska Brewing Company. Arcos Brewery of Palmer has won logo and label design awards. The brewery won gold in the 2017 Hermes Creative Awards competition in the packaging category. Quote, "We wanted to put the emphasis on the brewery name and to create a classic yet modern and minimalist design that is eye-catching and easy to read," says co-founder and creative director June Gertison, who is responsible for the design. The driving force behind the design was the launch of two new beers to their lineup of 22-ounce bottles, Mandarina Mousse Grapefruit IPA and Ovis Belgian-style Golden Strong, will join number 5 Boxcore Porter, High Ridge Double Red, and Steed Rye IPA on store shelves this summer. To support the impact of the new look and feel, all 5 bottle brands were redesigned. June explains, quote, "We wanted to increase brand recognition of the brewery itself, increase sales in Alaska and elsewhere, address the trend that consumers are loyal to categories of beer, and implement a modern minimalist design to make it easier to find our products when scanning shelves." She describes the Bauhaus principles of style and design are what inspired the design of the logo. Those principles include a minimalist approach, which features clean lines with bold, simple coloration. The new Arcos logo combines a modern font with a cursive font style, along with a stylized icon representing ingredients used in brewing. As for the bottle label imagery, the handcrafted nature of brewing was the inspiration for the labels, which were hand-drawn, then screen-printed directly onto the bottles. Quote, "I hand-drew the imagery to support the whole idea of just how hands-on our craft is and that brewing is truly a work of passion and an art form both inside and out," says June. Mandarina Mousse Grapefruit IPA features Mandarina Bavarian hops, which lends fruity and citrus tones, plus grapefruit adds just the right amount of fierce brightness. It is deep copper in color with an alcohol by volume of 6.2%, and IBUs of 72. Ovis Belgian-style Golden Strong features characteristic floral spiciness from Belgian yeast with the addition of Pearl and Hallertauer hops and a highly attenuated dry finish. It's sparkling gold in color with an alcohol by volume of 9% and 35 IBUs. In a memo, Representative Paul Seaton of Homer asked the House Labor and Commerce Committee, chaired by Representative Sam Keto, Democrat of Juneau, to consider legislation to repeal or amend the small craft brewer exemption. The exemption pertains to the first 60,000 barrels of beer sold in-state by a brewery that meets the federal definition of a small brewery. If this suggestion is adopted, the excise for small craft breweries will leap from 35 cents a gallon to $1.07 a gallon, effectively tripling the tax Alaska craft breweries pay. In his memo, Paul Seaton stated that this change will equate to $2.6 million in tax revenue to the state. Quote, "Amending and updating this statute would create a level playing field for the alcohol industry," Seaton said in his memo to the committee. What this proposal actually does is give large out-of-state breweries a leg up when competing with small Alaska businesses. Besides not having the economy of scale large outside breweries have, the cost to produce beer in Alaska is substantially higher. Out-of-state breweries ship the finished product for distribution in-state, effectively paying for shipping of the final product once. Alaska breweries, on the other hand, must ship in their main ingredients like hops, barley, and malt, as well as their bottles and cans. In addition, almost all of their heavy industrial equipment is shipped from out-of-state suppliers. For anyone that has ever paid for shipping from the lower 48, you know how expensive it can be. Imagine how expensive it is for the tons of ingredients and equipment required by a brewery to operate in Alaska. Due to this fact, Alaska breweries operate on a smaller margin than outside breweries, and if the excise tax is tripled, the price of Alaska craft beer will have to rise to accommodate the new taxes. As with all products, there is a pain point for consumers, and eventually they will choose a lower-priced product rather than indulge in the higher-priced craft products, although they would prefer to support local. In 2015, the year of the most recent economic impact study, the Alaska brewing industry was responsible for approximately 1,400 direct and 2,300 combined direct and induced jobs. In the same year, the industry generated $340 million in direct income, as well as a combined income of $492 million. This economic engine was responsible for $47 million going into the pockets of Alaskans who work in the industry, while contributing $33 million to Alaskans who support the brewing industry and $16 million to Alaskans through induced spending. That's it for beer news. Now let's move to our interview with Recess Duty, produced our new theme song, Beers of Alaska.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, General Manager of KDLL, helping out with Drinking on the Last Frontier this month. Beer is a communal drink, best enjoyed with others. So as we launched our new craft beer show with Bill Howell, we wanted to get other people involved as well. Not only are we lucky on the Central Peninsula to have a vibrant craft brewing scene, but we've got a happening music scene as well. So KDLL asked local musicians to craft a theme song for Drinking on the Last Frontier. We asked that it be original, up-tempo, and celebrate craft brewing on the peninsula. Other than that, style, instrumentation, lyrics, and everything else was up to you. We got some really great entries and had a hard time choosing between them, but finally came up with a winner, Beers of Alaska by Recess Duty. We'll get to them in a minute, but first, we wanted to share some of our other excellent entries. We got a song called Cheers from Lev Vaughn of Homer. You can find more of Lev's music at his website, levitatetheband.com. Here's Cheers.
One, two, three, four. Here I am on the spit again, gazing out over Cold Point Stout. Kayak Beach Blonde, letting it all hang out. Where the land meets the sea is the place I want to be. Bitter broken birch, enough to quench my thirst. Broken birch bitter, now that tastes better. Red Knot Ale never seems to fail. Back that up with an old Inlet Pale Ale. Headed north with a farmer's friend. Gonna harvest reds on the Kenai again. Grabbed a growler full of Mother's Milk Stout. Keep an even keel, brother, that's no doubt. Bread is staff of life, then beer is life itself. Don't let that pint go flat on the shelf. Every honeymoon ought to have a breakfast beer. Cheers, cheers, have another beer. Cheers, cheers, have another beer. Take a cab home. We want to see you again. Thank you.
Thanks and cheers to Lev. And also thanks to Loretta Spaulding, who sent us a song titled Drinking on the Last Frontier. Local music fans might have heard her in some of her previous musical incarnations, Midlife Crisis and Hot Flash. Here she is with Drinking on the Last Frontier.
When you're trolling for some action in your camo fishing gear, while avoiding interaction with the tourists we all fear, if you come up empty-handed, don't despair, be of good cheer. Just pop the top and tip one back and start drinking on the last frontier. Well, we ain't no city slickers, and we ain't too debonair. We're rough and tough and can't get enough of drinking on the last frontier. If you're lost and lonely hearted and looking for someone dear, matchinfarmers.com can leave you quite unclear. Remember what they all say when you're north of the equator. The odds are good, but the goods are all. That's why we're drinking on the last frontier. Well, we ain't no city slickers, and we ain't too debonair. We're rough and tough and can't get enough of drinking on the last frontier. Well, we ain't no city slickers, and we ain't too debonair. We're rough and tough and can't get enough drinking on the last frontier. Oh, we're drinking on the last frontier.
Now on to Recess Duty, which is a group of local music teachers. There's Kent Peterson at Soldotna High School, Jeannie Duhon, who just retired from Kalifornsky Beach Elementary, Jonathan Dillon at Mountain View Elementary, his wife Kristen Dillon at Nikiski Middle High School, Simon Nissen at Kenai Central High School, and Tammy Volumaturo, Artistic Director of the Kenai Peninsula Orchestra. They've been playing together for 2 years now at Veronica's, Odie's, and various other venues. School music teachers have to be pretty disciplined and composed to keep control of a classroom full of so many potential distractions. And these teachers are all classically trained, formally educated musicians, so you might expect rehearsals to be a serious, orderly affair.
Maybe somebody else wants to.
Not so much.
Yeah, no more press conferences.
They did pull it together long enough to tell us about the song. Here's Kent Peterson. So how did the song come about?
Well, we heard the ad on public radio that you were looking for a song for Drinking on the Last Frontier and wanted to do that. So I started thinking of how to come up with the song and went through a couple ideas, but basically, it started out trying to think of things that rhyme with beer and Last Frontier and went from there. So came up with a good chorus together. The group kind of, I think, did that at first. And then I was out hiking and was thinking of the verses kind of and came up with going through the different beers and microbrew, homebrew, and brought it back and we added chords and did that part of it together.
And was it more that you were thinking about music when you were hiking or thinking about beer?
Well, I was going up Skyline Trail.
Oh, that's easy. Beer.
Yeah, beer. And luckily I had my phone along so I could record my ideas as they came along. Otherwise I would have forgotten them. So yeah, I was probably thinking about beer.
So if anyone saw Kent Peterson hiking up Skyline and he looked like a crazy person talking to himself, he was actually creating music for public radio, and we appreciate that. So do you guys play original? You play some original stuff for the band, right?
We do some of Kent's originals, and now that I'm retiring, we're thinking about doing some writing together, so hopefully we'll come up with something.
So since this is kind of your job is doing music day in, day out, what makes you want to come together for fun to do this in your off hours?
I guess we love what we teach.
Yeah.
And it's fun to, you know, play with musicians that already know what they're doing and you just get together and do it.
Do you find each other trying to conduct last teach slash crowd control your fellow musicians?
No, not really. And it's really a lot different from what we do in the classroom. Like when we're teaching music, you know, we're teaching a more classical approach and now we're singing pop songs and the music's not written out except for the lyrics and the chords. So it was a nice stretch for all of us to, I think, to kind of learn something new. Like now we're just creating music by how it sounds and also, you know, creating music and sharing it, kind of demonstrating that lifelong approach to music that is really important and just having fun doing it.
Yeah.
Some of us are out of our comfort zone big time, but it's really fun to try new things.
I think that's all of us. We're all classically trained musicians doing this, so it's a little fish out of water.
Mm-hmm. And where all are you guys playing this summer? Where can people hear you in person, not just on the radio?
We're playing Music in the Park June 7th, Wednesday nights. That's the first Music in the Park, which is such an awesome thing that the Chamber's doing. I love Wednesday nights in Soldotna have taken on a new joy. So, and then the River Festival right after that, the 9th, 10th, and 11th, we'll be playing at that.
To keep up with Recess Duty, including upcoming performances, you can check out their Facebook page, and you can listen to them every month on Drinking on the Last Frontier.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before you leap, sip before you drink what you
thanks to Recess Duty, and now we'll take a quick break. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst.
Beers of Alaska.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier with KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. We're moving to our feature story for this month, The Health Benefits of Beer. I received a call after my last show from a listener who suggested that I should talk about some of the health benefits of the moderate consumption of alcohol, especially in the form of beer. The caller pointed out that consuming alcohol is actually used as a diagnostic technique to differentiate between sufferers of Parkinson's disease and the much less serious familial essential tremor, something I was not aware of. I am aware that scientific evidence continues to accumulate to support the proposition that the moderate consumption of alcohol, defined as 2 drinks per day for the average male and 1 drink per day for the average female, results in better overall health than that experienced by either teetotalers or heavy drinkers. For 1 drink, read a 12-ounce beer, a glass of wine, or 1 cocktail. So let's go over some of these benefits. Beer benefit number 1, protect your heart. Wine usually gets all the credit as the alcoholic beverage that helps cut back your cardiovascular disease risk, but it appears that beer is just as heart healthy. Italian researchers have found that moderate beer drinkers had a 42% lower risk of heart disease compared to non-drinkers. Beer contains vitamin B6, which protects against heart diseases by preventing the buildup of a compound called homocysteine. It has a thinning effect on the blood and prevents the formation of clots, which cause blocks in the coronary arteries. Moderate consumption also reduces the risk of inflammation, the root cause of arteriosclerosis, which is cholesterol and plaque building up on the blood vessels and artery walls. Beer consumption also boosts the level of good cholesterol by 10 to 20%, thus reducing the risk of dementia and cardiovascular disease. Beer benefit number 2, prevent type 2 diabetes. Dutch researchers analyzed 38,000 male health professionals and found that when men who weren't heavy drinkers began drinking moderately over 4 years, they were significantly less likely to be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Increased alcohol consumption over time didn't lower the risk in men who already had a couple of drinks a day. So again, moderation is the key word here. Beer benefit number 3, be kind to your kidneys. Cheers to never having to pass a kidney stone again, or if you're lucky, ever. Researchers in Finland found that each bottle of beer a man drinks daily lowers his risk of developing kidney stones by 40%. The researchers couldn't exactly explain the link, but speculated that a high fluid intake not only makes for an increased number of trips to the bathroom, but could also keep kidneys functioning properly. Additionally, the researchers said the hops in beer may be responsible for the correlation, helping to slow the release of calcium from bone, calcium which could then be reabsorbed by the kidneys and deposited as painful stones. Beer benefit number 4, lower your blood pressure. High blood pressure can be responsible for a range of health problems, but beer can lower your risk for hypertension, research suggests. In one study, Harvard researchers found that moderate beer drinkers are less likely to develop high blood pressure than those who sip wine or cocktails. Beer benefit number 5, prevent a fracture. A couple of beers a day could actually strengthen your bones, according to a study at Tufts University. Men who stuck to 1 or 2 brews had up to 4.5% greater bone density than non-drinkers. But more than 2 beers was associated with a 5.2% lower density, according to the study. Beer benefit number 6, packed with nutrition. Beer is an excellent source of many nutrients. 1 12-ounce beer has around 1 gram of fiber. It is also packed with B vitamins like niacin, pantothenic acid, folate, riboflavin, and vitamins B6 and B12. It is also rich in silicon, a nutrient that helps strengthen bones and is found in few other foods. Beer is a good source of vitamin B12 and folic acid, a deficiency of which may lead to anemia. Vitamin B12 is also essential for maintaining normal growth, good memory, and concentration. In fact, some anthropologists postulate that the better nutrition was one reason brewing became so prevalent in primitive human cultures. Beer drinkers were simply healthier and more likely to survive than non-drinkers. Benefit number 7, cleansing the gastrointestinal tract. Beer, especially dark beer, is a good source of soluble fibers that promote general health. This includes being good for the heart, as well as helping to clean out the digestive tract. Beer benefit number 8, hops against cancer. Researchers at the German Cancer Research Center in Heidelberg have discovered that beer contains a powerful molecule that helps block both breast and prostate cancers. Found in hops, the substance called xanthohumol blocks the excessive action of testosterone and oestrogen. It also helps prevent the release of a protein called PSA, which encourages the spread of prostate cancer. Scientists have long known that the substances in hops help to block oestrogen. This is the first time, however, that they have found to also inhibit testosterone. Quote, "Research is still early, but in trials we hope to further demonstrate that xanthohumol actually prevents prostate cancer development," said Kalisser Gerhauser of the Heidelberg Center. If successful, xanthohumol may one day be developed as a cancer-fighting drug. In the meantime, it's just one more reason to enjoy that super hoppy IPA. Research into the health benefits of alcoholic beverages in general, and beer in particular, will continue, but the preponderance of evidence now available, one thing appears clear. For the average person, the moderate consumption of beer is very good for overall health. I'll drink to that. So there you have it, the health benefits of beer. On our next segment, we'll be interviewing Brian Olson of Alaska Berries. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai. Hello and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai. We're here with Brian Olson, the owner of Alaska Berries Winery, a mile and a quarter down West Poppy Lane from Kay Beach and Soldotna. Brian, why don't you tell us how you got into the wine business in the first place?
Well, thank you, Bill. Well, it was an evolution, really. When we started this farm, 12, 13 years ago, and started realizing that we were growing a lot more than we could just use for ourselves, it just was an evolution. And it finally reached a point where after the commercial jam sales were going really well, we realized the next step was to go into the winemaking business. And part of that was the research that we had done was that there, at that time, there wasn't a winery in the state that was 100% Alaska grown. There was wineries in the state, but they weren't farming first and then making wine. And we wanted to fill a niche in the state where to produce everything that we could make into the wine.
Have you got any competition yet as an estate winery? Are you folks still the only ones that are complete 100% Alaska grown?
As far as I know, right now, we're the only ones that have been permitted by the Department of Natural Resources to use the Alaska grown logo in our wine. But I'm not sure of anybody else being able to do that.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the different varieties of wine that you're selling?
Yes, again, everything that we grow, we make into our products. And we have enough different varieties of fruit that some years we have more abundance than we do other years. But we have blackcurrant, blueberry, gooseberry, Haskap wine, raspberry, redcurrant. We make a raspberry rhubarb wine. We call it a redout rhubarb. And then straight rhubarb wine, Saskatoon wine, a blend between Saskatoon and gooseberry called Sassy Goose, strawberry, strawberry gooseberry, and strawberry rhubarb. Those are our varieties that we currently have now.
So you mentioned Haskap. My understanding is that's a pretty unique fruit. You're the person responsible for bringing it into commercial production here in Alaska. Why don't you tell us some details about that?
Yes, the Haskap berry, years ago, we started researching fruit plants that other folks weren't growing, and we came across the Haskap berry, which is different than a honeyberry. A lot of folks you throw the term out, honeyberry, and that's the Russian variety, and those have been around for quite a while. But the Haskett berry is Lanicera cerulea, and Phyllocalax is the what we call the Japanese variety. And our stock originated from Japan, and then we've been breeding them here to develop strains that work good in South Central Alaska. And that's our flagship crop. It's just an incredible berry plant for our area. It's got every attribute you could ever want. It's long-lived, 40, 50 years, which I haven't been able to prove that yet, and I doubt I would probably live long enough to do it. And they're so healthy, they blow a blueberry away for the health benefits, and that's pretty bold to make that statement. But it carries three times the antioxidants of a blueberry, twice the anthocyanins and different vitamins. It's not a real finicky plant for planting. We always encourage folks to plant it in the best soil they can. But really, they're a real low-maintenance plant. We haven't seen any major issues with the plant in a dozen years. And now our yields have gotten up to the point where some of our older plants, we're getting 15 to 20 pounds off of a plant. So they're a great plant, and they make a... We just found out yesterday, as a matter of fact, we entered a wine competition, the Northwest Wine Summit, and it's all of the Western states and Canada, and we won gold medal on our Haskap, so we were pretty tickled to hear that. We haven't gotten the medals yet, but we were notified, and so we were really excited to hear that. But it's an incredible plant, and we make, that's our flagship, so our jams, syrups, vinaigrettes, wines, it's our number one crop.
So I'll be the first one to admit I don't know much about making wine. I'm a home brewer of beer, not wine. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the process and the variability from crop to crop?
Yeah, the variability, that is so true. We always encourage our customers, you know, if you come and you tasted some of this wine and the next tank, when I say the tank, we do all of our, it's all stainless steel tanks that we use. But each batch, each vintage is going to be some differences to it. Plus, we're always going to try to improve. We're never satisfied with status quo. So every year, we do other bench trials and bench tests with a core group of what I call my professional wine tasters. And we want to make what they like. And so the locals have been so supportive of this winery. And a lot of our wines are based on their taste preferences. But they also realize that one year the sugar content may be higher than the previous year in that same fruit crop. So we always encourage, you know, to come back. And if you've tried one vintage or even a different tank might be a little bit different. But the process, I know absolutely nothing about the brewery side of things. But for us, we harvest all of our fruit when it's ripe. And that's the beauty of owning your own farm and your own wine, because we control it from the berry to the bottle. So we only pick when that is at its peak Brix content. We go out with refractometers, we check our fruit, and we know when it's at peak. And then that's when we harvest it, and we freeze our fruit. And we found that by freezing it, it releases the juices, breaks the cell structure down a lot better. And the fermenting process is a pretty much standard fermenting process. And the actual technical part of how it all goes on, typically most fermentations last 2 to 3 weeks, primaries, and then the process, by the time we bottle, it's 6 to 9 months, and then we age it. So most of the wine that the customers are drinking is usually about a year old. They're fruit wines, so they're meant to be drank, you know, fairly young. They're not like a grape wine where they're going to age for 20 years. We encourage folks to drink them up in the year or two after they get it, if not that same day.
Lord knows I'm not a huge wine connoisseur because beer is my drink of choice, but I've tried your wines and frankly, I like them because they tend to be a lot drier than many of the fruit wines that I've had in the past, which tend to be more on the sweet scale. So why don't you talk a little bit about how you came up with your flavor profile? Because I think it's a little different than most people think of when they think of a berry wine or a fruit wine.
And that was part of our focus group early on. What we found was that the focus group for our locals around here, they preferred a wine that wasn't super sweet, is what they told us for our fruit wines. And as they sampled our wines as we went along, we found that if we balanced the acidity with the residual sugar, we'd end up in the mid-range. And so some of our wines, if you viewed it from a scale of 0 through 10 for the category for dry, and 0 through 10 for medium, and 0 through 10 for sweet, our wines are pretty much about a 9 or 10 on the dry end up to a 0 or a 1 on the sweet scale, with a lot of our wines falling right in the middle group. And we have found through the reactions of our customers is that they say exactly what you said. They prefer a mid sweet wine for fruit wine and not a super sweet wine. Now, there's dessert wines out there, of course, for different events and different things, but we don't make that. None of our wines are on the scale of the super sweet. In fact, a couple of ours that we call sweet, some folks say they're just above on the mid-range, but that's our range. And the taste profiles, they're so subjective, but they run the whole gamut. What we hear a lot of is the folks can smell the aroma of the actual fruit. When they get a glass of strawberry, they just the strawberry aroma gets them, the raspberry aroma, the Hascap aroma. And the flavor profiles, we don't put out a profile of our wines on the tasting cue sheets that we hand out. We just tell folks, you know, you describe it how you want to describe it. I don't feel comfortable telling you that it's going to have a certain profile. I think that you taste it, and if it's refreshing for you and it tastes good to you and it reminds you of certain flavors and things, that's what's important.
That's a good point, because taste is an incredibly subjective sense. I've seen that with tasting beers. Different people have different palates, and different things evoke different sorts of responses and memories and various other inputs that all tie together in how you experience the taste of a particular beverage. So that's a good point. You know, everybody's going to be different. Everybody's palate's different. So trying to tell people, I always shy away from that myself. I never try and tell people how something should taste to them. You really have to let everybody experience it for themselves and determine for themselves what they like, what they don't, how things taste to them.
For us, we feel that we have enough varieties that if somebody doesn't care for one, we think we have something here that they will like on the other end. And we encourage folks, you know, when they come out to taste wine, you know, try something different. Try something you haven't tried before. You may like it. You know, it might become your new favorite. And next year, it might be a little bit different, too. But that's what's great, and that's what makes the world go around.
So besides here at the winery, where else is it available?
Well, we're going to update our website to show that. But right now, locally, Three Bears, I really support Three Bears. They support us. And they came to us and they wanted to carry our wines. And they're a local-owned state business. They have six stores throughout the state. And they sell our wine in all their stores. Country Liquor, they sell our wine locally. Save You More sells our wine. The Grog Shop in Homer. And if I'm forgetting somebody, please, you know, forgive me. But there's the Hunger Hut out in Nikiski carries our wine. And Dorothy from the Vagabond, she's been a great supporter of our winery, and she sells our wine too. And right now we're negotiating. We're self-distributors. We don't go through a major distributor. We do it all ourselves. And right now we're working with a large company in Anchorage that's interested in carrying our wine, but we haven't finalized that yet. And once we do, we'll make that announcement.
Great. So what else do you see coming along from the future? What else do you have that you might want to try?
Well, that's a great question. I'm one of those folks that every time there's a new yeast out or a new tannin out, I've got to try it. I'm just that way. However, the cider industry has really taken off, and a lot of our customers ask us, are you going to make cider? And we've tried to source local apples, and we are going to continue to do that. Right now, the demand for apples retail is pretty high for locally grown apples, but we're making contacts with that. In the meantime, we are making apple cider, hard cider. We're in the process now of hoping to have it by the 4th of July available. And with that, we are doing experiments right now with different varieties of hard cider. We want to make a gooseberry cider and a raspberry cider and a Hascap cider. Our main goals right now would be those four.
Those would be blends with the fruit and apples. Is that what you, when you say a cider, is that what you mean?
Absolutely. In order to be called a cider by the federal government, and how you do your blending, you have to do that during the fermentation process. You can add a wine to it later on. You can, but you have to go through a different process. Where we wanted to stay pure with the cider. So what we're doing is, with the fruits during initial pre-ferment with the hard cider, but it's the base is the apple cider, the apple juice.
Great. So besides selling your outstanding wines and jams and vinaigrettes and such, what else is available here at Alaska Berries?
Well, thanks, Bill. Another aspect of our farm is the plants. And years ago, we bought plants from bigger box stores, and they didn't work for us in this area. So we decided we were just going to do a lot of experimentation with different fruit plants, see what worked well here. And throughout the years, we feel that we have plants that we have here that work well for us, and we want our customers to be happy and successful. So we sell plants that we grow. And we only sell plants that we've either grown that we know are successful or are currently growing. And we sell lots of fruit plants throughout the year. We also started something last year since our plants in the farm have gotten more mature, they have bigger yields. So now, last year we started our first U-Pick, and that went over really well. The customers loved it, and it was a win-win for everybody. And it all depends on Mother Nature as far as if we get enough yield from our crops to meet our needs, then we put out a newsletter. Folks can sign up for our newsletter either through our website, which is www.alaskaberries.com, or through our Facebook page, Alaska Berries. And on there, you'll find a link to sign up for our newsletter. We don't spam anybody. All it is a way for us to communicate real quickly. Hey, we got fresh fruit for sale, and it'll be up in clamshells. It was picked this morning, and our price is competitive, basically the same as grocery stores charging. And we also are going to have a U-Pick again this year if we have enough crop. Last year, we opened it up to Haskett picking and charged so much a pound for the customers. And Saskatoons and gooseberry and possibly raspberries this year. We just put in two more rows last year, so hopefully we'll have enough that folks can come out and do a U-Pick. And that'll be strictly announced through the newsletter or through our Facebook page because we won't know from day to day or weather or pests or whatever could happen, you know, that could put a quash to that real quick. But we're hoping to be successful this year with it. And so far, the spring and the summer is looking really exciting for growing a good crop this year.
All right, Brian, well, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us. We wish you good luck with the weather so that we can all enjoy a lot of really good fruit and wine come the fall. We encourage everybody to come on down to Alaska Berries and check out what they have here at a mile and a quarter on West Poppy Lane.
Yes, and our hours, we're open Wednesday through Sunday, 2 to 7. And the gate's always closed to keep the moose out, but just come up to the gate, open the gate into the property and drive on in and close the gate behind you. Or if the gate's open when you got here, leave the gate like you found it.
This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. After the break, we'll talk about this month's beer style. Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. This month's beer style report will be covering the Weissbiers of Germany. Weissbier is the classical wheat beer of Bavaria and one of Germany's greatest and most distinctive beer styles. Weissbier means white beer in German. This name derives from the yellowish-white tinge that is imparted by the pale wheat and barley malts from which the beer is made. Outside of Bavaria, most Weissbier is known as Hefeweizen, literally yeast wheat in German. This name derives from the fact that it is a wheat-based beer that is usually packaged unfiltered, with plenty of yeast turbidity in the finished beer. There is also a filtered version, known as Kristallwiesen. By German law, a beer that is labeled Hefeweizen, Weissbier, or Weizenbier must be made with at least 50% malted wheat. Most German Weissbiers are made with 60 to 70% malted wheat, with barley malt making up the remaining malt bill. Weissbiers are among a very few top-fermenting ales made in Bavaria, an area most famous for being the birthplace of bottom-fermenting lagers. Weissbiers are fermented by a family of closely related yeast strains that produce many of the classical flavors of the style. Whereas the wheat itself gives the beer a certain lightness of palate and a dash of acidity, the aromas of cloves, bubblegum, bananas, and smoke that characterize Weissbier are all the products of fermentation by these specialized yeasts. Some breweries outside of Germany, particularly in the United States, use the word Hefeweizen to describe and market beers fermented with standard ale or lager yeast. These beers are misnamed. They have no classical Hefeweizen character and should be more properly styled as American wheat beers. A true-to-style Hefeweizen ranges in color from straw to medium amber, is hopped with German noble hop varieties, and has an alcohol by volume of 4.9 to 5.6%. Besides the Hefeweizen and Kristallwiesen, Weissbiers come in several other varieties. Dunkelwiesen, literally dark white beer, is a Weissbier made using dark rather than pale barley malt. Wiesenbach is a Bach-style lager using malted wheat as part of its malt bill. There are also rare examples of Wiesendoppelbachs and Wieseneisbachs, stronger versions of the Wiesenbach. Here's an interesting note. In Germany, Hefeweizen is never served with the slices of lemon that became strangely common in the United States in the 1980s and 1990s. The aroma of the lemon overwhelms the beer's delicate aroma, and the oil of the lemon peel quickly destroys the beer's traditional head. American tourists who ask for slices of lemon in Bavarian beer gardens are generally greeted with faint smiles of pity. Hefeweizens are relatively low-intensity beers, meaning that they will pair admirably with lighter summer fare. Lighter fruit dishes and shellfish, along with salads with citrus vinegar dressings, all work very well with this style. Dishes that focus on fresh herbs, olives, or rosemary also typically pair well. A personal favorite of mine is matching it up with a rich tomato and basil soup. If you're interested in trying out this style and want to find some locally produced versions, St. Elias Brewing Company typically adds a Hefeweizen served in the traditional oversized glass to its summer lineup. Kenai River Brewing offers its Honeymoon Hef year-round in 12-ounce cans and on draft. So enjoy the summer with one of these delicious summer wheat beers. Stay tuned for our final segment, Beer Gear. Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. For our final segment today, let's talk beer gear. Now that the weather is beginning to get nice here in Alaska, it's time to start thinking about drinking beer outdoors and on hikes and on boats and fishing and all the other fun outdoor things that we do in the summer here in Alaska. So if you're going to take your beer with you somewhere, you really have a couple of choices. Choice number one, you take cans. Cans are very practical. They're light and easily recyclable. If you want to carry a six-pack of cans with you, you should really check out the insulated tube coolers that are available from multiple manufacturers. If you've never seen one of these, it looks a little like a rod case in that you carry the six cans in a long line in an insulated bag that goes over your shoulder. These types of coolers are practical for hiking and other outdoor activities, and they're available for $10 to $20. So you might want to check those out. If, on the other hand, you're going to take bottles with you, you're going to need a way to open those bottles because everybody knows good beer does not come in twist-off tops. That means you're going to need a bottle opener. Personally, I carry my bottle opener on my key ring, so I always have it handy. And I get mine from a company known as Pangea Designs. You can find them on the web. That's P-A-N-G-E-A Designs. They make several styles. The one I carry is called the Pickpocket. The Pickpocket is a keychain-sized titanium bottle opener with an integrated pocket clip designed to hang keys in your pocket rather than in an awkward clump at the bottom. It's made slim, lightweight, and minimal in size in order to keep the bottle opener virtually unnoticed on the keychain. And then the added versatility of the pocket clip further reduces the bulkiness of your keys. The Pickpocket Alpha features four holes along its body that can be used to attach additional key rings, lanyards, or other accessories, and retails for $20. The Pico is the smallest bottle opener in the world to use leverage. That then became the most popular bottle opener funded by Kickstarter. Solid titanium, made in the USA, and tiny, like really tiny. Using a sturdy split ring for leverage and placing your thumb on the opposite side of the cap to lift, the Pico makes quick work of bottle caps, requiring only a single tug to remove a cap. It may not be quite as efficient leverage as a full-size opener, but certainly no other bottle opener packs this much prying punch per inch. In fact, we find it does a better job than many other keychain designs that are much larger. Each Pico comes with a 1-inch heavy-duty split steel ring, and you can also purchase a titanium ring if you prefer. The Pico is the size, basically, of the bottle caps that it removes and retails for $11. The final design offered by Pangea is called the Beer Top Delta. This isn't a pocket bottle opener so much as a desktop one. It's a spinning top and bottle opener collaboration, constructed of grade 5 titanium frame and a fixed press fit ball. The design incorporates a bottle opener and a 3/8 inch wrench into a fun to spin pocket top that you can put on your keychain or put on your desktop. It's a little more expensive at $55, but it does make a great gift. So there are some options for your keychain bottle opener. I recommend any of them. As I say, I've carried a pickpocket for years and find it works extremely well. Finally, on beer gear, there's a new book out that I should mention. It's actually a second edition of a book that came out several years ago. It's called Tasting Beer by Randy Mosher, and it's one of the best overall beer books that I've ever read. In fact, I like it so much that I think I'm going to start using it as the textbook in my beer class come the next spring semester. It's about 350 pages and is available in both hardback and paperback on Amazon.com. So if you're interested in beer and you want to learn some more about it, I strongly recommend you check out Tasting Beer, An Insider's Guide to the World's Greatest Drink by Randy Mosher. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and if you have any suggestions or things that you would like to hear covered on this show, please feel free to contact me either via KDLL's Facebook page or directly via email at beerontthelastfrontier@gmail.com. And if any of your friends missed this show and would like to listen to it, point them toward kdll.org, where recorded podcasts of the show are available for download. As a final thought for this show, I'd like to leave you with an ancient Egyptian proverb. The mouth of a perfectly happy man is filled with beer. So let's all get happy. See you next month. Cheers.